From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. There is no mystery about the death toll or what was bombed hit at a hospital in Kunduz, Afghanistan, very early last Saturday morning, middle of the night. There's plenty of mystery still about exactly why an American AC-130 gunship let loose on the target. Doctors Without Borders, which ran the hospital, now closed, destroyed, is crying war crime. The top U.S. general in Afghanistan calls it a mistake. This hour on Point, the attack in Kunduz. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. How could this happen? Why? And what now? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We will go in this hour to Afghanistan. We will talk with an American veteran of what air attack targeting in Afghanistan, one of those who has called in the attacks from the ground. We expect to hear in just a moment from Doctors Without Borders in Brussels. Joining me right now from Washington is Matthew Rosenberg. He's national security reporter for the New York Times, a longtime reporter based in Afghanistan for the Times. He was at the hearing yesterday where General John Campbell was lightly grilled by U.S. senators about many things in Afghanistan, including the attacks. Matthew Rosenberg, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me on.
So two things jumped out at me from the hearings. One, the general said, correct me if I'm wrong, that this attack came within the U.S. chain of command. This was not called in by somebody else. Responsibility lies with the U.S., I think he said, and it was a mistake.
He did, and he seemed to kind of be expanding on and somewhat backtracking from comments he'd made the day before. When he got to Washington on Monday, he said that, you know, we were helping Afghans who were under fire. Our own forces were not under fire, which was what the initial reports from his command had indicated.
And his own statements indicated that earlier, right?
Exactly. And I think on Monday when he said that, you know, he left a lot of people with the impression that he was throwing the Afghans under the bus. And I think yesterday, you know, he got up and said, well, no, ultimately, this is the responsibility of the United States and the U.S. chain of command, not anyone else. But, you know, he has avoided saying where exactly Americans who are on the ground were when the airstrike was called in, only that the Afghan forces who were under fire called in an airstrike through Americans who were in the vicinity. Does that mean they had eyes on the target? We don't know. And that's an important distinction. You know, you want to be careful when you're using something as powerful as an AC-130 gunship that you're not going to destroy a hospital, which is exactly what happened. And if that is what happened, if they didn't see that, that's a huge problem for both him and for the Afghans as well.
There's some subtle questions here and some very basic questions. I mean, Doctors Without Borders says that the U.S. has had for years the coordinates of this hospital. It's been there for a long time. Americans have been flying in Afghanistan and around here for 14 years now. How is it possible that in the age where every, you know, American driving around in their car on the way to work has GPS practically, that if you've got a coordinate and they've got presumably, you know, geopositioning and all the rest, how could they not know it was there?
I don't want to be seen like I'm letting anybody off the hook here, but I never cease to be amazed in places like Afghanistan and war zones how little everyone seems to know about what's around them, even when they've been told or their predecessors have been told. And, you know, one of the huge problems in Afghanistan has been that the U.S. has fought a series of one-year wars, and now it's a one-year training mission, I guess, where people are constantly cycling in and out. Things are changing. So, you know, what you tell them one day may be forgotten by the next guy or may get filed away somewhere, which is a huge problem when you're thinking about things like hospitals. You know, how do you not know that? Was this crew flying this airplane, were they new to the region? Were the Afghan commandos who were under fire, were they part of the people rushed up there? Did they know the area? Did the Americans there know the area? This is something that they should have known and should have taken care to have been aware of, clearly.
Still so many questions here. Matthew Rosenberg with the New York Times, please stand by in Washington. I want to go for a few minutes right here to Doctors Without Borders. Dr. Bart Janssens is with us. He is Director of Operations globally for Doctors Without Borders. He joins us from Brussels in Belgium. Dr. Janssens, thank you very much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Why has Doctors Without Borders, I mean, it's tragic and we're sorry for the loss of your staff, we're sorry for the loss of the hospital, it's terrible on every front. But why has Doctors Without Borders gone to this cry of war crime so quickly?
Well, I mean, this is a hospital that has been attacked and it was a large hospital that's been there since a long time has been repeatedly attacked by an Air Force aircraft in an extremely precise and violent manner. The entire hospital building has been destroyed and nothing else around it. So this was clearly a very high-powered attack on a large, well-known hospital, which led to the horrible consequences, as we know. So many of our staff have died. 10 patients have died and burned in their bed, and the entire hospital now is destroyed. This was one of the hospitals, one of our best, biggest hospitals, and an essential place in the war zone of the north of Afghanistan.
Dr. Janssens, General Campbell said yesterday before the U.S. Senate that this was a mistake. How do you respond to that?
Well, we want, obviously, more information. We cannot just take that as an explanation or anything else. Such a horrible attack is anyways, in many ways, a grave violation of international humanitarian law. That's why we want to go much further. This, for us now, the more we think of it, is not just an attack on this hospital. This is an attack on international humanitarian law. It's one of our prime projects, which took enormous efforts to get there and to achieve these results for the population. So I think if we let this pass, then international humanitarian law is left even more vulnerable than it's before. That's why we want a full independent inquiry, as we have been more precise about today.
It has been suggested that there were Taliban fighters inside the hospital. What have you heard from your staff who were on the scene about that? And if there were, does it make any difference in your war crimes characterization?
Well, I think the second question is the most important one. Even if there would have been a couple of fighters in our hospital, as been said, and for us, we have no information at all in that sense.
When you say you have no information, do you mean, are you denying there were fighters, or you just don't know?
Well, we are, for the moment, conducting our own investigation. Obviously, is not completed, so we cannot final on that. But all our information we have now is that that the hospital was functioning as before in its normal way, meaning nobody else in that hospital was present outside patients, their caretakers, and our staff. Obviously, it's become such a big history that our investigation needs to go further on this, but for the moment, we continue to stay with our line that there was nobody else in our hospital. That's where I continue to say what we said before.
Yeah.
This would be no justification at all. This would be basically claiming that somebody has committed a war crime, because then it would be a war crime if this would be used as justification.
You're calling for an independent inquiry. General Campbell yesterday did not seem prepared to go there. He said he had confidence in NATO and the U.S. to do it. If there were an independent inquiry and they agreed with you, what would bring you satisfaction in this case? The U.S. is already talking about financial reparations, but is there something more? Do you want to see people in jail?
Well, what we want is a clear protection against international humanitarian law. The story of the Afghan and the American authorities has changed now four times already. We have heard four stories already on what's supposed to be happened. We have lost all confidence that this will create all clarification. What we want is to understand what happened, and we want is an independent inquiry on what really happened, why it happened, and who's responsible.
Why do you think this attack happened that night? What's your suspicion?
We are without any explanation. This is just incomprehensible that this hospital, so well known and so large and easily identifiable, has been attacked. It's just for us unimaginable how this could have happened.
It's been suggested that local Afghan government troops were resentful that your hospital would treat Taliban as well as other wounded patients. Are you worried that it was deliberately targeted by government Afghan troops with American firepower because they don't want you to treat the Taliban?
This hospital exists since 4 years and has been established step by step by talking to all parties in the conflict in Afghanistan. We have had guarantees in many senses that this hospital could function and should continue to go. The functioning of this hospital is the basics of international humanitarian law. We hope that this can be confirmed, that this will still be possible after this attack.
What about forward going, Dr. Janssens? Will Doctors Without Borders continue to operate in Kunduz, continue to operate in Afghanistan?
Afghanistan, for sure. We have large projects, maternities, general hospitals throughout the country. For the moment, they're fully running, and they serve dozens of people every hour, I would say, because they're very large hospitals. Kunduz, that's the big question now. Our entire facility has been destroyed, bombed to the ground. So there we have to start again. Here we need to understand more. But let me be very clear. We are in Kunduz since more than 15 years. We are very well committed to the needs of the population there. So we'll, as soon as we can, we want to go back to have a look at what is possible for us to, and if ever possible, I myself personally, I feel very committed to start working again in Kunduz.
Last question, yes or no if you can. Would you have trust in an American or NATO investigation of this incident?
For sure not. We want a larger investigation that can be fully transparent for everybody who wants to know this.
Dr. Bart Janssens, Director of Operations for Doctors Without Borders, joining us from Brussels in Belgium. Thank you very much, sir.
Okay, thanks for having me.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking about the U.S. air attack on the hospital in Kunduz, what we know, and where this all goes. Matthew Rosenberg is with us, national security reporter for the New York Times. He has spent a lot of time in Afghanistan. We will go to Afghanistan in a moment. And you can join us this hour. What do you think? With GPS and all of our years of experience in Afghanistan, how could this happen? The top general, U.S. general, says it was a mistake, but does it look to you like an accident? Can you picture a scenario where an attack on a hospital could be justified? Do you see a war crime here? On Monday, a patient out of the hospital in Kunduz, interpreted here by the BBC, recalled the scene when the airstrikes happened Saturday night.
Doctors were about to take me to an operating theater when the bomb hit. There were flames all around me. I saw patients and doctors burned to death.
And here, another patient, what have we got? Yeah, who was being treated at the hospital in Kunduz, also talked about what he saw, BBC.
There was no place to hide. My father dragged me to the basement. At daybreak, troops came and took me out.
Troops finally coming to take him out, but there was a lot of 22 dead there, a lot of hospital staff, patients burned in their beds. Yesterday, before the U.S. Senate Armed Services Committee, General John Campbell, top NATO and U.S. commander in Afghanistan, talked about how it happened.
On Saturday morning, our forces provided close air support to Afghan forces at their request. To be clear, the decision to provide aerial fires was a U.S. decision made within the U.S. chain of command.
That is taking some kind of responsibility, made within the U.S. chain of command, very clear about that. And then it was a mistake, he said.
A hospital was mistakenly struck. We would never intentionally target a protected medical facility. I must allow the investigation to take its course, and therefore I'm not at liberty to discuss further specifics at this time.
There's a lot we don't know. Doctors Without Borders wants an independent inquiry. The general demurring on that front yesterday. Matthew Rosenberg, please stand by in Washington with us right now from Manitou Springs in Colorado. Is Michael Golombeski. He is a retired staff sergeant. He served 8 years with the U.S. Marine Corps, deployed in Afghanistan and in Iraq, served as a joint terminal attack controller with Marine Special Operations Team in 2009. His job was to call in airstrikes. He's author of Level Zero Heroes, the story of the U.S. Marine Special Operations in Bala Mogab, Afghanistan. Michael Golombeski, thank you very much for joining us.
Tom, thank you very much.
You've done this. You've done it on the ground. Is it possible that the U.S. AC-130 did not know what it was striking?
I don't believe so, Tom. Okay, you got to understand that this thing with AC-130 gunships, they're designed to do two things, all right? That is to save friendly lives and to kill the enemy. These are precision instruments, precision weapons. The crews aboard these aircraft are highly trained. They do these type of operations all the time, whether close in with friendly forces or in sensitive areas. Now, I can guarantee you that the videotape recordings from the aircraft have already been pulled and they're already being looked at. So we're going to see firsthand, or the investigators on the military side are going to be able to see firsthand exactly what happened, exactly what the aircraft was looking at, to include all the radio transmissions coming to the aircraft. So they're going to have a perfect picture of what exactly happened on the ground, because right now we've got a lot of unknown factors, talking about if there were Taliban fighters already in the vicinity, or were they using a portion of the hospital compound as a fighting position. They're going to be able to tell all this from the tapes that come from the aircraft.
We have reports that the firing from the AC-130, this very powerful gunship, went on for the better part of a half an hour or an hour, sort of rolling attacks here, 15-minute chunks of attack, even as Doctors Without Borders was frantically, I'm sure, calling. I mean, they were calling, we're told, Washington and elsewhere. How high would that gunship have been flying, and what kind of arms would they have deployed here?
Well, we're looking at the AC-130 gunships. They only operate at night. They don't operate during daylight hours, and they are mainly in support of special operations. As we know, the Afghan commandos came into the Kunduz airport after the Taliban had seized the area. So they brought in the Afghan commandos. Now, along with the commandos come special operations advisors that operate on the ground with them.
U.S. special operations, you're saying?
Yes, and mm-hmm. They provide the link to all those U.S. assets, because Afghan forces would never talk directly to American assets. So an American aircraft in the air would not be talking directly to an Afghan soldier or commando on the ground.
Yep.
They would be talking to a U.S. operator. Now, with the AC-130 gunship, they're operating at low level. This is why they fly at night. They can't fly during the day because they become too much of a target. They're too slow. They're too big. What it does is they use precision fires. Now, from the photos that I saw of the structure mm-hmm. and the reports that I've read so far, that they're targeting one specific building within the compound grounds of the hospital. And from the damage of the building, it looks like the main damage came from the fire that happened. Now, the gunship...
And by which you don't mean fire from the aircraft, but the fire that started once it was hit.
Yes. It looks like a massive fire broke out in it. From the damage on the outside, it looks like the aircraft didn't use... It's got three main firing systems on it, mm-hmm. starting from a 25-millimeter, then you have a 40-millimeter, all the way up to, if it's depending on what model it is, it would have a 104-millimeter cannon on it, which doesn't look like it was used, because you would definitely see structural damage, like you would see holes punched in walls.
That's an enormous cartridge of 100-plus millimeter.
Oh, yeah, it's like directly firing an artillery round right at it. So you're gonna know that was used. So from the damage of the outside, you're looking at it probably used the 25-millimeter and the 40-millimeter grenades, which are relatively small pieces of ammunition. And the AC-130 gunship, the people that are operating the sensors that are in control of the targeting, they have a clear infrared image of the ground. So when they said it circled around, it was circling around. It wasn't firing. And then it would open up and fire and then go silent again, means that they identified a target to be eliminated. Then it goes silent. It rotates around and it observes. It picks up as much information as it can. And what they're looking at is, if somebody is in a window and they fire an AK-47, they are going to see the flash of that weapon. They are going to positively ID that is a weapon. And they coordinate with that, with the information that's coming from the guys on the ground that are speaking to them, that are giving them real-time updates on what is happening on the ground. If an individual runs out and they're carrying an AK-47 and that weapon has been fired, that weapon is going to glow bright white in the sensors. They're going to know that individual is carrying a hot weapon.
Yeah, Staff Sergeant, the place you wrote about, Bala Murghab, was in the boonies. This was in the middle of Kunduz and was a hospital. Doctors Without Borders says firing on a hospital is a war crime, period. Even if there were Taliban in there, which they're saying they were not, would that have been training that these pilots and their crew would have had, that you cannot fire on a hospital?
To say just flat out across the board you cannot fire on something is a limitation that you cannot put on individuals operating on the ground. Now, you have to understand, these guys are operating at night. They're conducting a major operation to take back a provincial area. So you have a large built-up area. You have multiple different types of structures, alleyways, things
everybody,
like that.
Everybody knows that, but this is a hospital, and you said they would know it was a hospital, and hospitals are supposed to be exempt, are they not?
They are, as in the same way that a mosque or a church is exempt. Now, there's caveats to engaging targets like that, where you have to, for example, you're running the risk of losing U.S. lives or coalition lives to be able to break contact to get away. There are different procedures or different caveats to that rule that allow the commanders on the ground, the guys on the ground, the individuals in the aircraft looking at the ground to make that call on the scene.
Michael Golombeski in Colorado, please stand by there. Matthew Rosenberg, you're listening closely here with the New York Times national security reporter. Is there leeway within the Geneva Convention, within U.S. military procedure, to fire on a hospital in some circumstance?
I'm not a lawyer, so I want to be very careful here. My understanding is that if an attack is coming from a protected structure or building, it loses that protection. However, I believe the onus is on the troops, be it Afghan or American in this case, to try and pull back first. And if they can't pull back and safely disengage, then you escalate. That's also the Americans' own rules of engagement here. And these have been in place since Stanley McChrystal's days in 2009 and 10, where you're taking fire, it's a civilian area, first you try and pull back. If you can't pull back, you escalate, you go from, say, rifles to mortars. If that doesn't work, mortars are something a little heavier until you finally call in a much bigger airstrike. That you're supposed to try and do your best to protect civilians. And in the case of a hospital, it's even more stringent and rigorous. And that's why that question of, did the Americans who are calling in this strike, who were in Kunduz, who were in communication with this AC-130, did they have eyes on this hospital? Or were they relying on the Afghan troops' assessment of the situation and then calling in on that? And the Afghans saying, well, we can't pull back. The Americans say, okay, well, that seems to be all right, so we'll call in the thing. We don't know, and that's what makes it such a big question. And it does seem to be they did not have eyes on. You know, General Campbell's been asked that question a few different ways and has not directly answered it. Me and a colleague spoke to people at the Pentagon yesterday who think the preliminary investigation has found that they probably did not have a kind of visible view of the target when this was called in. And that's one of those big unanswered questions that will be found out in the investigation.
If I may, here was an exchange between John McCain and General Campbell yesterday.
Even though the Afghans request that support, it still has to go through a rigorous U.S. procedure to enable fires to go on the ground.
But there was no American forward air controllers on the ground.
So we had a special operations unit that was in close vicinity that was talking to the aircraft to deliver those fires.
So Senator McCain seems in tone to be suggesting that there weren't air controllers, but the general says, no, we had special operations in close vicinity talking to the aircraft that delivered the fire. So, Matthew, the question is not – when you say we don't know if they had eyes on the hospital, are you suggesting they didn't know it was a hospital, or this is an issue of what was going on in and around the hospital?
I don't know what they did or didn't know, but I do know that General Campbell was asked a similar question on Monday at a quick news conference in D.C., and it close vicinity can mean a lot of things. Does it mean you could see the target? You had a full view of what was the intended target? And if you don't have a full view, were you aware of what it was and what was your view of the situation that the Afghan troops were in? You know, there's a whole kind of range of knock-on effects there. If you can't see this, then you have to make a series of assumptions or a series of rely on other troops to kind of – before you unleash this incredibly powerful weapon on a hospital. And like we said earlier, the hospital demands a degree of rigor that we don't know was applied here and may not have been.
Michael Golombeski, again, you've called in attacks in just this way, though not on this night, not in Kunduz.
But you've already said that they had to know it was a hospital. And again, do you have any question about that? Would they, if they have coordinates on file with the U.S. military, it's been flying around here for 14 years, is there any question that they would have known?
Well, I'm not going to assume to know what, you know, the operators on the ground or the pilots in the aircraft knew or didn't know. But this was a known structure, all right, just like the police station, just like the prison or any type of government facility. These are all known areas. Now, when you talk about operating at night, these guys are moving around on foot. It's real easy to get disoriented. Things happen in the fog of war, especially when it's 3:30 in the morning and you're in a fierce gunfight in the city. Things can get out of control and can escalate very quickly. And I think we're just going to have to wait and see what the internal investigations, because the investigation's already going. As soon as they identified that something happened, that investigation started. And it immediately started with pulling the tapes from the aircraft. And like I said, that aircraft records all that footage. Wherever the gun is pointing, it is recording, and it's also recording audio. So they're going to see, they're going to be able to tell by the radio transmissions what was happening prior to the actual engagement of the gunship.
I want to get, if I may, to Afghanistan. Margarita Stancati joins us from Kabul, Afghanistan reporter with the Wall Street Journal. Margarita, welcome back to One Point. Thank you very much for being here.
Hi, Tom.
How close have you come to figuring out a narrative of what happened that night, Saturday night in Kunduz?
It's still very unclear. What we do know is that the hospital was bombed, and as we were discussing earlier, it was precisely hit. It's not that if you look at a satellite image of MSF's hospital in Kunduz, you'll see that it's a building surrounded by gardens, surrounded by roads. So there aren't any buildings in this immediate vicinity that could have been targeted instead. So it definitely doesn't look like it was collateral damage. The question is, why was it hit? And this is something that the investigations are trying to establish. Were there active Taliban fighters in the compound and using the compound as a firing position? That is something that we still don't know. MSF treats all kinds of patients, regardless of their background, and that includes insurgents. But there's a big difference if those insurgents were patients being treated or if they were using the compound as a firing position. And MSF has strongly denied that there were any active fighters in its compound, and they're also still completely puzzled as to how this could have happened.
We even have Doctors Without Borders people saying there was no fighting in the vicinity of the hospital. Is it possible, Margarita, that the Afghan troops would just be upset that Taliban were getting medical treatment there and want it to be hit on that basis?
That I don't know, but I would find that difficult to believe. Kunduz, for the best part of the past week, has been in a state of siege. There's been heavy battles across the city with Taliban hiding in buildings as Afghan troops have struggled in their efforts to clear it. So it is very possible that there was fighting in this immediate vicinity, but we don't know for sure. I think that's something that will become clearer as the investigations proceed.
Matthew Rosenberg, is this something that takes months, years for this kind of investigation? Can you imagine the U.S. military ever letting it go to an independent party, as Doctors Without Borders insists?
You know, General Campbell hasn't ruled that out. And it's one of the things I can imagine them doing, but I wonder how much they'd give. A lot of this footage is going to be classified. I know our attempts to find in past instances, get our hands on this kind of stuff, have met with huge resistance from the military. And so you're in that kind of weird spot where even if they did let it go on, how much access would they get? And that's, you know, what an investigation depends on.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm
Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking this hour about the U.S. air attack on the hospital in Kunduz. 22 died there on Saturday night. U.S. AC-130, very powerful gunship, flies low, flies at night, and has all kinds of firepower on board. Let loose, quite precisely, we're told, on a Doctors Without Borders hospital in Kunduz. It'd been there for years, reported in with the military many times, but it was hit. Many died. Patients burned in their beds, a lot of hospital staff there. Doctors Without Borders crying war crime here, calling for an independent investigation. The top U.S. general in Afghanistan testifying before the U.S. Senate. You can join us this hour. How could this happen? And if the general says it was a mistake, what exactly was the mistake here? If it was a mistake, is it a war crime? Afghanistan vets, how do you see this whole thing, this strike? And if American troops stay on in Afghanistan, will we see years of this? Is there looking to support troops on the ground, but not heavily on the ground themselves? What does it suggest about forward American policy? With Margarita Stankati, Afghanistan reporter for The Wall Street Journal. She's with us from Kabul. Matthew Rosenberg has spent a lot of time in Afghanistan. He is national security reporter for The New York Times with us today from Washington. And Michael Golombeski is with us from Manitou Springs, Colorado today, retired staff sergeant. He's done exactly this kind of work, calling in airstrikes. He's author of Level Zero Heroes, the story of the U.S. Marine Special Operations in Bala Murghab, Afghanistan, and joins us today from Colorado. And we've got lots of calls for all three of you. Ken in Ticonderoga, New York. Ken, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Tom. Why is it, I'm Vietnam vet, by the way, why is it that the military's first reaction always is to lie? First reaction here was U.S. troops were under fire. We had to respond. You know, the implication being, hey, we gotta save our boys.
Yep.
Ask Colin Powell, who whitewashed me lie, what the first reaction is. It's always the lie. Cover up. Those tapes are never going to be seen. Same reason that the tapes from Abu Ghraib disappeared. Same reason that the torture tapes disappeared, even though they are ordered to be held. You're never going to see that stuff. Stuff happens, right? Jeb Bush. Stuff happens. It's war. Fog of war.
Let me go to your first point. And this, Margarita, came from General Campbell early on, that it was American troops under attack. Now, that was changed as things unfolded here, but that was definitely and clearly asserted in the first report out on this. Does that look like a lie? Could the general have not known that, Margarita?
Well, there's definitely versions of event that keep changing. So the first we heard it was that it was U.S. forces came under fire and that it was collateral damage. And now we have General Campbell saying that it was a mistake, although we still don't know what the mistake exactly was.
But hang on a second. I want to hang on. You said we heard. But it wasn't just we heard. It was General Campbell himself. He said that the strike was, I'm quoting him here, this was on Saturday, against insurgents who were directly firing upon U.S. service members advising and assisting Afghan security forces. So we didn't just hear. He said that, right?
Yeah, I mean, this was the official position. It was the initial official position of the U.S. military.
Yeah.
And the very first response that it was possible collateral damage to a medical facility. As it turns out, it wasn't really collateral damage, and there were no U.S. forces under fire. So there's definitely changing. The story has changed, and we still don't have complete clarity on what happened. One aspect of this case that is interesting is that U.S. airstrikes are carried out all the time in Afghanistan, not as much as they were before, but they happen pretty regularly.
Yep.
And usually they happen in really remote corners of the country where it's really difficult to verify what actually happened. But in this case, it's an airstrike against a humanitarian organization that is credible and has high profile, and their version of what happened contradicted from...
Lost Margarita for a second there. Let me get another caller, if I may. Nebraska, La Vista, Nebraska. Rivka is calling. Rivka, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to say that my husband and I actually would have probably become conscientious objectors when we were in the military, we flew in the reconnaissance gathering airplanes. And
what service were you in? Were you in the U.S. Air Force, Rivka? Is that what you're saying?
Right, right. The U.S. Air Force military. And we there's just no way that we can agree with what is going on with, you know, in the trauma center. There is no way that it could have been a mistake. We flew in these airplanes that give time-accurate intelligence to friendly U.S. aircraft. And I do want to say one more thing, too, that when we see these videos of these missions that are going on, our airplanes giving all these intelligence reports so that they can carry on the missions, I just have to say that U.S. troops are becoming so desensitized. I don't think that we actually think of these targets as actual humans. We've become just so kind of messed up in our heads.
Rivka, we've got it, and I appreciate your call there. Again, as a veteran, I mean, the question raised there, Matthew, if it was a mistake, you know, one of our listeners online, Brandon, says, if it was a mistake, what the hell were they trying to hit? The general said it was a mistake. What exactly is the mistake, then, that he's referring to?
Hello?
Hello, Matthew, are you there? I don't seem to have Matthew at the moment. Margarita?
Oh, wait.
Hello, Matthew, are you there?
I'm back. Yeah, sorry, we cut out there for a second. You know, and that's the thing. He talked yesterday about mistakenly struck a hospital, rigorous procedures. Okay, so what was the mistake? What procedures failed here? Because we don't know. Some of this sounds
but
like...
He's not saying that they hit the hospital randomly or accidentally. It is a precise fire. So was he suggesting that it was that they did it by accident in error? Or, I mean, didn't they hit what they targeted? So that wasn't the mistake.
He doesn't seem to be suggesting that they hit the wrong target. He seems to be suggesting they targeted the hospital in some kind of failure of their procedures or mistake, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. it wasn't intentional. That's what he's saying. I think one of the issues here is they don't know. They still haven't established that. They've got people up in Kunduz. They seem to be scrambling themselves trying to figure out what happened. And, you know, I think we see on TV and we see in popular culture a lot of high-end kind of military stuff. We like to imagine things are neat and clean, and yep. they're not. They're incredibly messy, but it does come down to the fact that you destroyed a hospital and killed patients and staff, which is you know, as MSF says, could amount to a war crime. And there needs to be a full accounting for that, which is very much yet to happen.
Margarita, we have not heard the kind of loud complaints from the Afghan government this time that we used to hear from Hamid Karzai. Why not?
Well, not at all. Quite the opposite. In fact, Afghan security officials, right after the airstrike, were saying that they're basically justifying the airstrike. They were saying that there were definitely Taliban fighters inside the compound, and so implying that it was justified to hit it. Some local security officials went as far as saying privately that it was a Taliban base. Of course, this is not the case, at least based on what MSF has told us. And also, Afghan forces are the ones who requested the airstrike. That's something that General Campbell said yesterday and that the Afghan government has confirmed today. Most airstrikes in Afghanistan are initially requested by Afghan forces. So this suggests that the responsibility is shared between the U.S. and Afghan military. And that's probably why we're not hearing any strong condemnation coming from Kabul on this.
Well, there was a kind of between-the-line suggestion that the U.S. troops who ultimately called the strike in could have been perhaps hoodwinked by Afghan troops on the ground. Is there a relationship of trust when it comes to targeting? If Afghan forces said, we need this, is there a relationship of trust?
They are extremely close allies, and they work, they cooperate on operations across the country. So, yes, I mean, if the Afghans called it and had good reasons to call it, the U.S. military would, if nothing else, take that request very seriously. Now, what evidence Afghan forces provided to their American allies, that's something that we don't know, and we're still waiting to find out.
Margarita Stankati with The Wall Street Journal with us from Kabul, Afghanistan today. It's great, as always, to speak with you. Thank you for joining us, Margarita.
Thank you.
Let's take a call from Tom in Illinois, South Central Illinois. Tom, you're on the air.
Hi. I honestly, I can understand how this sounds, my comment. But are people forgetting that this is a battle zone, a war zone, and that there might be casualties, and that I understand they want hospitals, but if you don't want to get hit or shot at, you might want to get out of the area, clear out the area. That's my comment.
But Tom, it was a hospital where they're treating patients, and they had reported, and everybody knew their location. They're going on the assumption, we heard from Doctors Without Borders, that they won't be fired on because they're a hospital. I mean, that has been a part of war also for generations.
To some extent, but they're not in Vietnam. They didn't put the hospitals right in the middle of a battle zone. They had to draw them back. You had to go in and rescue them and draw them back.
Well, but this is a city. This is not a tent. I mean, I take your point. I don't even know if I take your point. It's a city. It's not a tent. It's a building. They've reported where it is. But there's a kind of, hey, if you're there, good luck to you perspective on this. Tough crowd, tough world there. Matthew?
Can I also add that this hospital has been there for a long time, and Kunduz has not been a battle zone for a very long time. Until a few years ago, you could drive to Kunduz. I've driven there, and it was a while back. The war came to the hospital. The hospital did not go to the war. I think that's something we need to understand here, that when this hospital was built, this was a relatively safe, secure city. So they weren't intentionally saying, we're going to walk into the middle of a firefight and say, oh, God, you shot us. The firefight came to them, and that, you know, our forces and number of forces expect unarmed medical personnel to be protected by everyone. And, you know, maybe others don't do that. But my understanding is the U.S. is supposed to hold itself to a higher standard. And in this case, you know, the question is, did they?
Brian in Atlanta, Georgia. Brian, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I served in Afghanistan under the Army or technically under SOCOM. And I'll be quite honest with you, with AC-130 support, we took contact, I would not stick my head out to try to provide, you know, a BDA assessment or a battle damage assessment of how effective they were doing.
Because it was too dangerous? Once they started firing, it was too dangerous? Or
yeah,
why, Brian?
Put yourself in an infantry guy's shoes. If I know that I've got, you know, a gunship above me that can verify that they're engaging the enemy, why am I jeopardizing my life trying to, you know, give an accurate assessment of how effective they're being?
But let me ask you this, Brian. You were there. You were in the midst of this. If Afghan allies said to you, we need that big gunship to blast this hospital, would you say, okay, I'll call that in?
Yeah, it's not. You're talking about, you know, everybody talks about this formalized process. One of the great things about a gunship, especially, you know, an AC-130, is that they're able to hover or stay on target for any length of time and be able to give you that assessment themselves. I fully believe that if an AC-130 crew saw something in that hospital, like gunfire or something to indicate that those people were taking contact from that building, that it's, you know, it's one of those things that's a really tragic event, but an event that's not nefarious or you know, some sort of miscommunication. I really firmly believe that whatever unit that was that took contact simply asked for gunship support, and it's the reason why those special operations forces called it in, is because you've got guys with, you know, clear and imaging systems on board to be able to identify where that contact is coming from.
Ten patients or so burned in their beds. Hospital staff, you know, laboring to save them. 10 or 12 died. Is that not nefarious?
One of your advisors said a relatively small munition. I mean, a 20-millimeter cannon, the blast radius and lethality radius is pretty high. I mean, these things are not exactly precision weapons. You're not talking about rifles. You're talking about huge munitions. When he says relatively small, he means...
Yeah, but a hospital has patients in it. It has hospital staff in it. You start cannoning away at it.
Right. No one would debate on engaging a hospital full of patients. But if that hospital is used, or if it's next to being used by militants, I don't understand. You know, if you've got men on the ground taking fire...
Well, but Afghanistan did. We're told we didn't, but I appreciate your call. Matthew, I mean, the general himself said yesterday, we have a process, and it didn't work right here, is the way I took what he said. You know, Brian says no formal process, but isn't there a process for determining appropriate targets?
There is. And I think Brian, though, does make a fair point that, you know, you call on this platform, as they call it, because it can identify things. It can see what's going on. I mean, one of the questions I'd have for MSF, and not just for MSF, but mm-hmm. for anyone, is are there kind of items in a hospital that could, you know, be hot and mimic signatures that could be confused for weapons? We've seen cases before where, you know, it does appear that there were mistaken identities where, you know, somebody was killed because they thought he had X and it turned or a weapon. It turned out to be, I don't know, something else.
But the MSF is saying more than that. They're saying Geneva Convention, you don't bomb hospitals.
You know, and like I said before, I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know. But I think my understanding of this, and I want to check with others, is that if a place is being used to fire on you, it loses its protection. But I'm not entirely clear on that.
We do not take that as a formal legal opinion by any means. Certainly Doctors
Please
Without
don't.
Borders does not. Oh. And I'm not sure the Geneva Convention does. Our caller says things slide over time in all kinds of directions. Maybe they're sliding here. The general himself, John Campbell, yesterday saying, mistake. We've got a lot more to learn about this. We've got gratitude for our insights here today. Michael Golombeski, author of Level Zero Heroes. He was there. He did the targeting. Now he writes about it. Michael, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Tom, for having me on.
And Matthew Rosenberg, national security reporter with the New York Times. Thank you for joining us today, Matthew.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation, get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.